Anita.
Well, you know why. Wendy, you must know why.
For Rex Tillerson.
For Rex Tillerson.
What? How does this just keep happening?
It is a revolving door, isn't it?
And to find out on Twitter, that's like in the broadcast business when you'd find out you lost your job in Robert Feeder's column.
You know, for a guy who seems to enjoy firing people face-to-face, I've seen him fire Gary Busey 1,000 times. He can't seem to do it now that he's the president. He used to fire him. He'd sit across the table from him. There'd be a woman on one side and an old guy on the other side, and they'd all nod in agreement. Yeah, it's good that you fired Gary Busey. But now that he's the president, he can't do it in person anymore.
There are people that seem to get great joy out of firing someone. I could never do it. So if I ever owned a business, I would have crappy people working for me. Because if they screwed up, I would never be able to fire them.
I wouldn't.
Get that business going.
We all want jobs.
Crappypeople.com.
I have had two jobs where they've said to me, if something happens, one when I was managing the video store in Downers Grove, and the other at a morning show that you were not a part of. And they said, if somebody was there not doing the job that was expected of them, would you have the ability to fire them? And I said, no. And they go, you wouldn't? I go, mm-mm. I would leave that to you. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I couldn't do it either.
It's too hard. And I'm sure that a lot of people have that in them to just go, this could be better. You're part of the reason it's not better. You must go. Having been fired, it's not pleasant. It's got to be the worst part of the job to let somebody else know they're no longer employed.
And I think most people think that way. They don't get thrills out of firing someone.
Steve, yeah.
Well, just look at the words that are used. We're going to let you go.
Right.
Oh, you're going to let me go.
But I don't want to be let go.
Right. We're going to lay you off.
No. Hold on to me.
When I was... please hold on to me. Hold me tightly. When I was let go from WLS, the man let who fired go. Me told me that it was not personal. And I said, I disagree. It's highly personal. It's probably the most personal thing that you'll do all day.
Well, I quit that place to come and work with you. Oh. So I got even with
him. We fixed them.
Yeah, I have been fired not that many times. Once with you at Q101.
Yeah. That was a crazy day.
And once, after I got my first knee replacement, I came back to a pink slip.
And they fired you because of the knee replacement. Yeah. They said, we can't have a woman working her with one knee. Out. Get out now.
So twice in my life is not bad.
That's not bad. That's not bad. It's only been a couple times more than that for me. Just a few more times.
And I don't like to leave a place either.
Change is bad.
But no, I'm very emotional. Yeah. Like, you know, when I left the place that fired you to come back to work with you... I cried telling them I was leaving.
Really?
Because I felt guilty.
Oh. But they had to have understood it was for a better opportunity.
Yeah, but then they tried to double my salary.
Oh.
And I said, suck it.
I would have said, no, I wouldn't have said that. I was like, I'm listening. Keep going. What else do you have?
Yeah, but I didn't want to do it anymore. No. I needed to come here for a pay cut.
Yeah.
But what are you going
to
do?
Steve Bertrand, you wouldn't have had that over there.
Tipped it in.
Yes.
I knew I could work with you again, but a Bertrand.
That was the clincher.
Can't put a price tag on that.
No. Priceless.
No.
I'll see your Bill Leff and raise you a Bertrand.
that was said at the poker table.
Thanks, Jimmy DeCastro.
Of jobs. Absolutely. So goodbye, Rex Tillerson. Could you hand me some Kleenex? Because I knew I'd get all teary as I said this. He actually, I have to say this, he was one of the guys, and I heard Steve mention this to some effect earlier too, that even if you don't like the cabinet, even if you don't like the guys that have been assembled by Donald Trump, he was one of those guys that you kind of went, I'm kind of glad he's there. There's a couple of guys in that administration that you go, I'm kind of glad he's there to keep an eye on things, but now he's not there.
Yes, and I heard the audio that was played this morning on the Steve Cochran show where Donald Trump was saying, we didn't see eye to eye on many things. Iran was one of them, and he mentioned some other things. But that I didn't want to hear that because it's like, yeah, we didn't see eye to eye, so I let him go. You're not going to see eye to eye with everyone, and you're supposed to have a discussion and maybe have someone still in the swamp to help.
Right. But with this, Steve, please tell me if I'm getting this wrong, because this is what I've put together over the last couple of hours. Part of their disagreement was over this meeting with Kim Jong-un, right? He said it's not a good idea. You don't want to jump into this, correct?
Well, he was in Africa, was sort of speaking against it, or saying it wasn't set in stone, yeah, and things like that. Now, there's also reporting that he found out Friday that this was going to happen, which is interesting because he spoke out more forcefully about Russia and their involvement in this poisoning of former spy, much more forcefully than the administration has, at least from others. So you almost wonder if he got his wings a little bit over the weekend.
Oh, maybe.
And did I hear that he, according to Donald Trump's camp, that he was asked to resign on Friday but didn't?
Well,
and then
it's one of those things. When you get fired, there's what they call the Washington way, which is even though you're getting fired, technically you're resigning. And I guess that's for pension reasons, Steve. Is that the reason they do it that way?
It's sort of like letting you go.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know.
But if you're fired, you can get benefits and unemployment.
I don't think it has to do with benefits when it comes to these jobs.
Is it for reputation?
It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you hear the other story in the news here? This guy, it came out today, John McEntee, the president's personal assistant. Now, this can't be as weird as it sounds, but he was fired yesterday, according to the Wall Street Journal, for some unspecified security reasons and removed from the White House.
Oh.
This is a guy, pretty close, personal assistant.
Uh-huh.
And now he's going to join the president's reelection campaign.
Oh. Oh.
So you just got to figure, well, what is it that could have led to the firing? Because they said here fired,
right?
Not that he left.
But then there was still a place for him
in
somehow.
The campaign. Yeah,
interesting.
Wow, never a dull moment, is there?
Never.
I suspect it has to do with the security clearance thing. Like he couldn't get it, and so.
And Jared Kushner is working on that as we speak.
Right.
Okay. Good. We hope that's fixed soon. Wow. Interesting. All right. Let's take a quick break. We've got tons of show ahead, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Can I tell you about a strange flashback that I had today?
Yeah? From the war?
No, I wasn't in the war, Wendy. Mm. You're thinking of someone else. I was not allowed to be in any wars. I've played the game War. I'm very good at it.
The card game?
Yeah. Anytime you want to play, I'm always ready for a good game of War.
I miss playing cards.
Oh, so much fun. All right. So before the show starts, I find a bunch of stories, topics, fun ideas, recipes that you and I can talk about during
the
show.
Not enough recipes if you want to know the truth.
I know. I'm reading the emails. And I write them down. I write down what they are and where they came from, and then I give them to Jasmine, and she magically has them printed out. I don't understand the process. I just know that on a daily basis, that's what happens, and it's a miracle. I don't know how she does it. Today, the only pen I could find is this one, a pen that writes with green ink. And then after I wrote a whole page of ideas out and handed it to her, I realized, much like in grade school, she may not accept this.
I had it has two to different be blue or black ink.
Did you have teachers like that?
Yeah.
I had two different teachers that you could have worked on. You could have had a 1,000-page manuscript handed in, and if it was not in blue ink or black ink, it didn't exist.
Well, I have the only pen I can find is red. First of all, we're Christmas colors.
Yay.
Second of all, I can mark check marks on your, your list.
Here, I'll give you the list.
F.
Yeah.
With red.
That's what I deserve.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what I deserve. My teacher's meaning for this, if you didn't go to a school that had this, was that it hurt their eyes.
Oh, they're
this
such liars.
This hurts my eyes to look at green ink.
It is harder to read because it's the contrast between the white paper and the ink. It's not dark enough.
I didn't think about that until the whole page was filled. Like, as I was doing it, I went, oh, this is novel. I don't even remember the last time I wrote with green ink. But once it was done, and it looked freakish.
Did you have to take the cap of your pen off, too, because someone chewed it? What the hell's going on in this place?
That happens here in the studio on an almost daily basis. And
do
I
you know who that is?
I think Steve
Cochran. I don't think it's Steve
you
Cochran.
You don't think it is?
I don't see
who
him
is
as
it?
A pen
It's
shooter.
Not Ro, because he would not put someone else's pen in his mouth.
No, I know. I know.
I don't do it because the same reason. I'm a little germy, too.
John doesn't do it. I know that.
No.
I don't do it.
Patty? I don't think
Patty
she
Vasquez
does.
Patty Vasquez? I don't think it's her. Justin Kaufman, I bet.
That's my new favorite drink, by the way.
The Vasquez Vasquez?
Yes. It's really
spicy.
Good.
Spicy.
Can I tell you, I went out with my girlfriends last night to dinner. We went to a nice place in Oak Brook.
Wait. You guys haven't had a three-sentence conversation yet.
I'm sorry.
Before you do, Steve, who is it? You must know who it is.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't know?
I was thinking Ro, but you're right. Ro
would not. He would have to boil it first.
Justin.
It could be, because on an almost daily basis, there's a pen in here that it looks like a wildcat got at it or something.
I'd hate
Dave
to
Ennett. Maybe Dave Ennett.
Go Cats.
Yep. I bet it's Dave. All right, go ahead. Last night?
I went out with some girlfriends.
Because Steve wants it to last.
So I'll try. I didn't know what to do. We went out, five of us, girlfriends. One of my friends in from Hawaii. We needed to get together. Three of my friends' dads are not doing well.
They're all at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So and I just lost my dog. And
is this age?
Is it
just age?
Yeah. We're at that time. You know.
I guess so. Yeah.
So we just needed to get together, just to help each other through this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we wanted alcohol, if I may just say that.
Yeah.
And I ordered a Manhattan, and one of my friends ordered a glass of wine. One was a margarita. One was scotch. No major things.
Right.
It took 15 minutes for that drink to get to us. 15 minutes.
Is that a lot longer than usual?
Yeah.
It's like the scenes from Turns of Endearment. You said 1 o'clock.
Right.
All right. First of all, it just was a long time. So then our fifth friend came in and said, I want a martini. Pre-order it for me because I want it there waiting for me. So we tried to do that.
That's a professional.
It's a crowd.
Yeah. Wow.
We just, you know, it's sad for them. My father's already passed away.
Yeah.
Another girlfriend's father has already passed away. But it's just we were here to help each other and have a nice meal and have some cocktails.
Makes sense.
So it took a longer time for this martini to arrive. So my friend Vicky just went to the bar and said, could I have this and this? I'm sorry, but I can't wait for our server anymore.
Right.
Our server walked by our table, saw that Vicky had her drink, and did a very audible so he got mad at us.
Well,
we could not wait anymore.
I understand both sides.
Okay, well, so then he comes up and he's like, are you gonna order? He was super duper snippy.
Yeah.
So I pulled him aside and I said, you know, listen, we didn't mean to be rude to you.
Three of our dads are sick.
Said, I just lost my dog. Three
Knee
out of
replacement.
The four of my friends their fathers are not doing well.
Right.
We really need alcohol tonight. If you can kind of keep it flowing, we'd really enjoy it.
Oh.
And then my other friends jumped in and said, yeah, we didn't, you know, we're not trying to step on your toes, just if you could help us out.
Yes.
And then he came back and was snippier to us.
Oh.
So needless to say, when the tip came, we gave him 10%. Because I was super mad. It's
you handled that right.
And some
Still
of my friends were
tip,
feeling
not
guilty.
As high of a tip. That's fine.
Was it a restaurant?
It was a pretty nice restaurant.
So did you take a dining table?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no food.
No, we ordered food.
You did order
food. Oh, okay.
Okay. We ended up ordering food and...
did that take extra long?
No, that was better, but it was just the drinks we needed.
Yeah.
And all I needed him to say, really, is that first 15 minutes that took so long, all he had to say was, sorry, girls, you know, I got too many tables tonight, or the bar is slow. Just something to acknowledge us.
But he was still going to get tipped on the other drinks. He would have lost out on $1 or $2, probably, for that part of the tip, right?
I don't know. The drinks were probably more money than the...
But he wasn't losing substantial money. It was just he was losing something because the tip was given to the bartender instead of him for the one drink.
Yeah, but still, I just think, you know, first of all, we said, here's what's going on. So if you could just, please, we really want our cocktails. And then he came back and was snippy to us.
A server would love to hear those words because that means this is going to be a high tab.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just felt like we tried to help him. And then he came back and was even snippier to us. And I thought that, you know, dude... Listen, it's no big deal, but we're saying you've got a lot of stuff going on. I just thought if anybody would give me a tip, I'd be like, oh, God, sure. Well, I'll take care of you.
But he
got ruder as the night went on.
How old was he? I'm just trying to picture the whole thing.
He was probably 28. That would be my guess.
Steve, maybe he had a breakup that day.
Oh. Did you ask him if he broke up with anyone recently? I would have asked him that.
No, I didn't care at that point.
Oh.
Maybe that's what his problem was. He's probably like, well, they don't care what happened to me today.
Right.
And then I did see him towards the end of the evening sitting in a booth with somebody.
Oh.
I don't know what was going on. This is a pretty nice restaurant, too. And
I
was a little disappointed.
Well, Wendy, I have a surprise for you. Jasmine, tell him to come on in.
I don't even want to say his name.
Hey, what's on the tray?
I just, you know, I have never been a waiter or waitress or server or whatever it's called, but I really do try to be nice to them.
Of course.
Because right. I've seen people be rude to them. I'm not one of them.
Right, right, right.
So I just thought, you know, hey, listen, buddy, we're having kind of a bad night. If you could just keep the drinks flowing.
That's
but
the part
nothing.
Of it. That's my favorite part of the story, though. I just picture you, you know, you've got your arm draped around him.
Well,
my dog died.
I wanted to give
all
him
the
a
sad,
chance.
You tell him all the sad things that have happened.
Wasn't that a good thing to
their
say?
Their dads are dying.
My
come on,
knee
we just,
replacement. I expected the Blackhawks to have a much better season
I
than
didn't
they
bring
did.
That up.
We just need the drinks.
Although I did ask for a table instead of a booth because of my knee. So. But seriously, I just thought right. I was helping him by
of
saying.
No, I get that.
Dude, I know it was really long getting our first round, but right. you know.
But let's be friends.
I try to win everyone over.
I know,
it didn't work
I've seen
on this
that.
One.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Wendy will have just one more drink. That's it. That's her
only,
limit.
I only was able
only
to 10:30. Have two drinks, maybe three.
Oh, that's not enough.
Would have had more.
All right. News is next, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Bridget Carey of CNET will join us in about 10 minutes.
And we'll get in between the sheets with Bill Leff. Stay tuned. You told me to promo that.
I didn't say that. That's dirty. News on the show tomorrow, Wendy. Beaver Cleaver.
I'm looking very forward
Beaver
to Cleaver's this.
Beaver
Cleaver
is
going to
be on the show tomorrow.
Ward.
Won't that be fun?
Hey, Beaver. June was very nasally, wasn't she?
Well, yeah, but it was the 50s.
So what does that mean? I had a sinus
back
infection?
Back in the 50s, it was perfectly acceptable to be nasally.
Where's Annie Haskell?
And wear pearls when you did your housework.
How about it? With a lovely apron.
Always a lovely apron. So tomorrow, Beaver Cleaver, and we're trying to get Larry Mondello.
That would be pretty
We put out
kick.
A call for Larry Mondello. We want to have both guys on.
No
so
Lumpy
we'll
Rutherford?
He won't do the show. He refuses.
What
he
if we call out. Him Clarence?
He then maybe he would consider it.
Lumpy did it that one time, right?
Yeah.
And then he said never
yeah.
again.
One time right. only.
Didn't you love that show?
Loved it. Just
but,
loved
but
it.
But why did we love it? It was really...
It was so simplistic.
No, and, that's not it.
Well, because it was safe?
No, that's
why?
Not it.
Why do you think?
Because that wasn't how I really grew up. You know, my dad
like
didn't come home and my mom had an apron on and gave him a stiff drink.
Yeah. We loved it because nothing else was on.
Good point.
I wonder, because even, like, I saw a lot of it not original, but second run and third run and fourth run. And there were other options, but I don't know. It was just one of those shows that you just went, this is great. It wasn't great, but it was great. You know what I mean? Does
yes,
that make
I do.
Sense?
Because they really all overreacted, yeah. except the Beav was the best, quite honestly.
It was not. What was the other one? Who Ate the Daisies? Remember
no,
that
please
show?
Don't Eat the Daisies.
With Doris Day?
No.
Well, she was in the movie version of it, but she wasn't in the TV version of it.
They just hit a dog.
I like that one.
Yeah, that one was good, too.
Who was in that?
Yep.
Bunch of kids.
Right.
That girl, the blonde hair, Kim somebody.
Kim Richards?
Kim Carnes?
Yes.
Not Kim Carnes.
Oh, my God. We have got to be...
Kim Richards was...
Charades partners, because I swear to God, sometimes I say things and you right away are in my head.
She was in Nanny and the Professor. I don't know that she was in Please Don't Eat the Daisy. She would have been not born yet. So that would probably have held her back from that show.
So even wrong, you knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Please Don't Eat the Daisies. It ran from 1965 to 67.
Who was the mom in it?
Let me tell you. It was Pat Crowley.
Pat Crowley.
Mark Miller, Kim Tyler. There was a Kim in there.
Look at all the stars.
I don't know anyone.
Star-studded.
Right ahead of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
Love that.
Wait, the dog was... The dog was Lord Nelson played the Lada dog. There was a star dog.
For some
reason. Yeah, the dog ate the daisies.
God bless your soul, Tiki.
To Steve's credit, that was the reason it was show. It was called that. The show was called Please Don't Eat the Daisies because they didn't want the dog to eat the daisies.
Did you watch Lassie, too?
I watched the version of it that was John Provost.
You're so out there.
I watched that one because...
As opposed to what other version?
Well, there was a bunch of other versions, but they were...
Was
they
he Timmy?
Paled in comparison, yeah.
So we would say black and white.
I think that one started out in black and white and then went to color in its last season or
they
two,
They changed Timmy's then, too, didn't they?
Timmy Martin? I only recognize John Provost as Timmy. The others are pretenders to the throne.
And I look at, when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, I looked a lot like him. I still remember.
That's why you liked him? That is really conceited.
I remember.
I only watch me.
I only watch shows where the people look like me. What's wrong with that? So my mom and I were shopping at Ford City, and a lady and her daughter stopped us and asked for my autograph.
Oh, my God.
Which I gave them, Wendy.
So it begins.
He signed it.
I gladly gave them.
He signed it, Mr. Smith.
My mom asked why they wanted my autograph, because at the time I was three, and I didn't.
And you knew how to sign. You are a liar.
Wendy,
why are you so jealous?
And my mom said, why would you want his autograph? And they said, well, we watch him on Lassie all the time, and we love him. So I did. I signed the autograph, took some pictures.
That probably is what got you on your way.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the beginning.
Your first autograph.
Yep. And you know how it is, Steve. Once you sign one, you get this bloodlust. Yeah, you want more.
You do whatever you can.
You do whatever you can to remain in the public eye. Yeah.
Jasmine, we have got to find out, first and foremost, if John Provost is still around. Second of all, we have to book him on the show.
I'd love to talk to him.
And we have to tell him that you impostered him.
I was
the first place of stolen identity.
I would think John Provost probably really wants to talk to you, too.
I imagine, Steve, at some point in his life, he was stopped somewhere at a shopping center with his mom, and people thought it was me, I would think. But the resemblance was uncanny, Wendy. I'll bring you a picture of me.
You don't have a dimple.
I don't. That's the one thing you can use to tell who's who. If we were both sitting here right now, you would have no idea who was me. You'd have to look at the dimple and go, oh, well, that's obviously Lassie's John Provost, and that's my partner, Bill. That's the only way you'd be able to tell the difference. Also, he was in black and white, and I am in color.
On a good day.
On a good day.
He does look like you.
Oh, when I was little, that was me. I mean, it was unbelievable how much we looked
alike. Did your mom look a little like June Lockhart? No.
Not as much as I would have liked. No. That's the one thing, and I don't get mad at her. I miss her, but I wish if I could change one thing about my mom, it would have been that she looked a little more like her.
I just found a Where Are They Now picture of John Provost.
Does he look like Bill?
I hope he's handsome now. Is he?
Oh, he's deadly handsome.
Is he really handsome now?
He looks like you, yeah.
Yeah, does he?
Good for him.
He's lucky. We're both lucky. See if we can get him, Jasmine. John Provost. And do it quick, because I bet the other shows are clamoring to get him on, too. I'd hate to lose him to Cochran or Rowe.
The pen chewers.
Right. Those pen chewing hosts. We got to beat them to the punch on this one. All right, so you're showing me a picture of him now. I look a little bit like him now.
He looked better.
I think he's a few years older.
Like 13 years older than
you. Oh, is he? Yeah.
So that's what you have to look forward to.
Oh, good. Get a Hawaiian shirt and some ill-fitting shoes.
And a dog.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then Bridget Carey will join us. She used to be on Lassie, Bridget Carey.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
It is a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us right now is senior editor from CNET, Bridget Carey. Bridget, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. In the world of tech, what is Google Glass?
Okay, you remember that whole thing that people wore on their face?
Oh, yeah.
A couple years ago.
With a camera, and the idea was that you would look in this little glass prism off to, like, the upper left corner of your eye if you wanted to see, like, a little computer screen to tell you news alerts.
It could give you directions, or if you had a question, you could ask it, and the answer would be right in front of your eyes while you were walking around.
It wasn't as perfect as that advertisement was, because it's not really... I actually had it for a little while. It wasn't really in front of your eyes as much as it was... cross your eyes and look up, and you might see it.
Oh. Oh.
And so it kind of failed because it was a interesting experiment that just never was made for the consumers. It was just a test kind of product.
Bridget, you remember what they compared it to? Remember in the Terminator movies how Arnold Schwarzenegger, or whoever the Terminator was at the time, he could look at somebody, and then all the data that you would need to know about that person was right there? That's how they were pitching it originally.
Because that, well, it wasn't necessarily Google's pitch, but it was whoever was interpreting it, because that was where the potential was, right? Have a camera recognize your face and pull information about you while you're at a bar. Like, but how creepy and uncool was it? So people kind of, like, you know, poo-pooed it. And
that went nowhere, because I got to be honest with you, I kind of forgot about it until I saw in your notes, remember Google Glass? No, I actually didn't.
Well, all this time, other companies have been trying to crack the way to make it work, and how you can somehow put technology on your face through glasses. And what we're finding this past week is two new products that have been announced that are trying to solve this in different ways. A couple companies are working on things for the workplace. Toshiba is one. They just had a Windows version of this. It looks kind of like Captain Picard Borg, you know, where like you have something like huge computer on the side of your face. But the idea is that you're in a warehouse or you're fixing something like the plumbing, and you want to know which wire do I cut, which thing do I connect. It almost would overlay instructions in front of you, so or whatever the case for your workplace.
Like that.
So like for construction, for repairs, like that's the kind of use that these companies like Toshiba are looking into. It's still expensive because it's not for general consumer, you know, and they're looking at like maybe $1,900 for one of these. That said, you know, by working with companies, maybe they can figure out a way to make it more practical. But then there's another aspect of this. You know, the headphone company Bose, they make those really high-end headphones. They are even making their own version of glasses. But that has nothing to do with the visual aspect. It's all about the sound. So they showed off this pair of, they call it augmented reality glasses, but really you're wearing sunglasses that over your ear, it's not like a headset that just kind of sits on top of the ear. You're hearing sound that could supplement what you want to do. So that's where you'll get the directions to turn left or turn right. Or, for example, if you're like, what should I eat today? You point your head in a certain direction. It's like, in front of you is this cafe. It has 3-star rating. And it'll give you descriptions as you walk and look at things. But there's no actual camera necessarily. It's all based on location data.
No one's going to do this. I'm sorry. Would you really wear that headset when you're going out to dinner?
I see this as potential for biking and you want directions because you want hands-free.
Oh.
But no, I am not going to sit there and go, wait, let me figure out where I'm going. Hey, I love information about this. It is a prototype. They don't have a price. They're not, like, selling this yet. But they were showing it off, and they even said, oh, what if, like, you're traveling on vacation and you want to know how to say something in the other language? You could nod or shake your head as a yes or no command to, like, say, hey, can you tell me how to say something in French, and it'll tell you over your ear. But honestly, I'm not going to go to a waiter, put my glasses on, be like, hold on a second, waiter, I got to figure out how to say this. I'm going to look at my phone, right?
You know,
you're just going to pull it up quickly on your phone. So it's fun to say that they're trying to do different things with it, but in general, a lot of tech companies are into this augmenting reality with visuals or audio components to kind of enhance the information you're getting in a hands-free way.
All right, now something I am concerned about, and I've been hearing about how these little gadgets are put over the little slot at gas stations, and it can, what's it called? I mean, they obviously are taking your credit card information. I can't remember what it's called.
Is it
like skimmers?
Yes. Skimmers. Just yesterday, I was filling up the gas tank, and it was this little tiny gas station that I had never been to before. And I found myself like touching it and looking and making sure there was nothing in the slot. But then I thought to myself, I don't know what I'm looking for.
Oh,
what are we supposed to be looking for?
It's the actual piece of plastic that kind of keeps your credit card snug when you're dipping it in. So what they do is they put another piece of plastic on top of it, and you can't even tell. This happened to a hotel I was staying at. I'm walking in, and they're uninstalling a skimmer at the vending machine.
Oh.
So, you know, think of places where people are looking for just to pay with their credit card, and they're not being checked off in, like a hotel. And all you got to do is pop one of these on to where you dip your credit card in, and it scans your card as right before the actual machine scans your card. So you're still getting your chips, essentially, but before you get your chips, it first scans you, steals that number and sends it to the hacker for later use, you know. So,
all right, but yeah, there are all those things, like in our cafeteria here in the Trib Tower, you can go, it's an honor system where you can go get a Diet Coke mm-hmm. and some hummus, and then you go scan it yourself mm-hmm. and pay. So there's no one manning that at all. Now I'm going to be scared to use that.
You know what I do? If something looks suspicious at it, first off, I never use an ATM that isn't like inside of a bank, if I can help it, because those like mysterious ATM machines are the ones that get, you know, messed with the most.
They're like portable ones. You see them in bars and stuff. Yeah, I don't use those.
I would actually grab it with my hand, the place where you scan your card, and shake it and see if it's loose, because you can just pop those suckers off. And then that way you know if it feels legitimately on there or not.
Does that ease your worries a little bit? Or are you still worried?
Well, see, Bill's not worried at all because he gets $20 cash every day from his wife. So he has cash, always $20. Do you ever have any left over? So sometimes you have more than $20.
One time I was up to $80 at the end of the week.
But he has debit cards, credit cards, but you don't use them, do you?
No, hardly ever. Dangerous.
What about this, though, Bridget? Like, there are so many places that don't take cash anymore. What is Bill going to do?
Where can I live? Can I live with you, Bridget?
The couch is cozy.
All right.
This sounds kind of counterintuitive, but it actually is true. Like, if you do banking on your phone, like if you use like Apple Pay or the Tap to Pay with your phone, it's actually more encrypted because it's not giving your pure credit card number to that establishment. So if that establishment gets their information compromised, like what happened with Target years ago, you know, like in this case, Target would never have had your credit card. They would have had an encrypted jumble of letters or numbers that are not actually your credit card. And so I actually think shopping with your, you know, Apple Pay is safer than actually shopping with a credit card. But two, sometimes you can't even help it, how things get hacked. There's this report that came out this week where security researchers were looking at gas station pumps, the ones where there's a screen, it's connected to the internet, maybe they're showing a video of something while you're pumping, and they're finding that some of these gas station owners are keeping the default password on there. They're like, to change the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 password or whatever.
Yeah.
And hackers find that, oh, look how easy it is. I can just boom, 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 get in remotely. Don't even have to connect a wire to it. Just get in because they know the default and mess with the software and put whatever they want on there or, you know, circumvent it and get your information through that. So I think that part to me was more scary than the skimmer because then, you know, your gas station owner has no idea what's going on in the background there. And they're just, you know, able to hack into machines. Anything that has a Windows, anything that is a machine can be hacked. It's just about, are these companies doing enough to make sure the default passwords are not used? In my office, we have a internet connected coffee machine, like most industrial ones for, you know, just serve like a bunch of people. And there's a default password on there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we just guessed it, and we got in, and so we could change the coffee names if we wanted to.
It's not nefarious,
but it's not nefarious. I can prank people on April Fool's Day, but still, it shows you that you gotta.
Someone's gonna hack your coffee, people. Bridget. Be careful.
You might get tea.
Right.
It's going to be horrible.
All these mechanical things, you know, company voicemails, just things that you get for the first times, 9 out of 10 times it's a derivative of 1, 2, 3, 4 or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sure. So you got to change that.
Especially with security cameras, that's how a lot of baby monitors get hacked, and you get creepos looking in and for fun, you know, on what you're doing. If anything, it's a lesson to all of us. Never keep something that is a default. If you want to have a situation where you just make your own up, always.
Even 4, 3, 2, 1 is better.
Right, no one would try it.
Wendy, I wrote that one down. I'm going to switch mine to that. 4, 3, 2, 1. I like it.
Bridget, always a pleasure. Be careful out there because somebody's going to hack us one way or another.
It's true. Bye.
Thanks, Bridget. It's Bridget Carey from CNET.
Yes, she is from CNET. You can find her at CNET.com. And Tech Tuesday here on WGN is sponsored by Illinois Tech Stewart School of Business.
Thank you, Steve. Wendy, before we get into this, I have a question for Steve. Steve, you're still there?
Yes.
You mentioned how the markets are down.
Yeah.
could that at all be affected by Rex Tillerson not being employed
no,
as Secretary
in fact,
of State?
No, in fact, the Dow at the highest was up 198 points earlier today. Mm. Steve Grzanich is watching it, and he says there was an EPA decision on a Pennsylvania oil company, and I haven't sorted all that out yet, but that was putting pressure on energy stocks. So we'll see. On Tuesdays, John Najarian from CNBC joins me on the business lunch. We always start with a look at Wall Street, so we'll get a pretty good explanation there. But it looked, I mean, earlier there were some good inflation numbers out, and so the Tillerson, there really wasn't a Tillerson hit on the market
today. There wasn't, okay. No. The factors that influence the market are always interesting to me, and I never know when something like that will make it go up or down. I just didn't know if that played into it at all.
It doesn't seem to be today.
All right. Wendy, see if you can guess this. This is tough. And Steve, you can jump in. Mary, you can jump in. I don't know if anyone will get this. Something major started 29 years ago today. Something that changed everything. Everything changed because of this, and it was 29 years ago today.
The internet.
Can you guess what it is? It is the World Wide Web.
Honest to God?
Yeah. Wow.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
that No, that was fantastic.
Because when you asked me off the air, I said the space shuttle. I didn't really know, but... Really?
The World Wide Web did not exist until 29 years ago today. A man by the name of Tim Berners-Lee is the man who is responsible for the World Wide Web. He's not solely responsible, but he's got a bunch of mail that he should really start reading, because it's been backing up for almost 30 years now. He, by the way, is not happy with the way things have gone.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
I have wondered this in the past, not because the story just came out this morning, but it's one of those things where the internet, for the most part, is a good thing.
Agreed.
For the most part. But there is some negativity.
There's the dark web.
There is some. That's the one I'm on. I recommend the dark web, Wendy. If you're searching for an internet, it's so much more fun, the dark web. Get yourself a membership on that one. But he says, here's the story. This is out of Yahoo this morning. Tim Berners-Lee, reserves his biggest criticism for the huge platforms on the World Wide Web, and by implication, he names specifically Facebook and Google, that have come to dominate their spheres and effectively become gatekeepers of the World Wide Web. Now, you and I, years and years ago, I know you'll remember this, Facebook came to us and said...
AOL. Facebook was not
AOL,
around yet.
Right. There was no Facebook yet. AOL came to us and said, we want to experiment with this thing called a chat room. And all this was new to us. And we, you know, it sounded like lost in space. We're like, yeah, a chat room? Tell us more. So this was the first time, according to AOL, that they tried something like this. And it was listeners and us interacting. We did it live during a broadcast. And it was crazy, because it was so, the mere idea that we wouldn't be seeing each other, we wouldn't be hearing each other's voices, but they could ask us questions and we would answer those questions in a chat room forum. It was amazing.
Now, this was prior to texting too, wasn't it?
Yeah, way before texting.
Because I know back in the olden days, we had to, you had to get a your phone number would connect you to AOL. There was a little CD disc that you had to install in your computer to get the software in it.
Right.
And then you would use your phone number, so you couldn't like make phone calls at home when you were online.
It was one or the other.
And what was the noise that it made? Donk, donk, donk.
Like that. It's beautiful. It was
a
beautiful
noise.
There was
a few donk, donk, donk. As well, once it connected.
In the early days of...
That was very good.
Thank you.
Fred Travellina.
I've been doing talent shows. In the early days of eBay, I would be... Like an auction was taking place, and I would be about to bid on an item and hopefully win an item, and then we would get a phone call at our house, and it would
knock
our internet was done. You couldn't have both.
It was really a crazy time back then, and we were at the Loop radio station, and there were... Not live chat rooms, but there were like message boards. So people would, you know, say, when I worked with Tony Fitzpatrick, it's like, Tony's really good, Wendy sucks.
Oh.
And, you know, people would just voice, kind of like the texts we get sometimes.
Yeah.
And then.
Same guy, probably.
Probably.
Long time listener.
Yes.
First time hater. So, yeah.
But when we were on the air, they said, yeah, let's do it. I remember the guy, I can't remember his name, but he was there from AOL. And it was the first time it has ever happened where it was live and in action as we were on the air. And I know you and I were freaking out because we were reading people's screen names.
Right.
And then, you know, with a colon and then what they said. And it's like, hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy. It's like, oh, my God, so-and-so.
Yeah.
I live in Broadview. Oh, look at this. And it was scrolling so quickly.
So what is now so commonplace.
Yep.
Was like it was such an adventure, and like I remember the AOL people were like, you know, everybody was congratulating each other. It was like a space mission. It was like being as part of a space mission. Everybody's like, wow, we thought this might work, and it actually worked.
I'm surprised we didn't do many more of those, but that was the first time that a chat room ever happened on AOL.
Yeah.
And again, if anyone is listening right now and you still pay for AOL, you don't have to. I mean, people still are.
Or for your electricity.
No, that you have to.
Oh, you're supposed to? All right.
But, you know, people think that you still have to pay AOL, and I'm mad at AOL for not, like, calling you and go, do you realize that you've been paying for this for 10 years and you don't have to be? But, you know, if somebody gave you $10 a month every month, wouldn't you keep it?
Well, yeah, my money would go up considerably. I would love for that to happen.
All right. Well, congratulations, by the way, are in order to Mark and Roselle. He called us and he walked away with the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers, Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. And I am going to do a nice thing, Bill, and I am going to change the time on this clock. I'm surprised that I wasn't late on Monday because we sprang ahead.
So your official clock is still off an hour.
This one here in the studio is. I don't know how to do it.
Oh, all right. It's the thought that counts. You considered it. That's all we ask. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, Wendy, the World Wide Web is celebrating its birthday. Happy birthday, WWW. It's 29 years old. Tim Berners-Lee is the guy responsible for it, or the main guy responsible for the World Wide Web.
Who? How come we haven't
Tim
heard
Berners-Lee,
of him?
Tim Berners-Lee. You would think that his name would be right up there with the greats. Right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? For some reason, he doesn't get the press. But Tim Berners-Lee was the guy who spearheaded the World Wide Web. It's 29 years old as of today. He's not happy with the way things have turned out. He says that Facebook and Google, he said, his words, control whose ideas and opinions are seen and shared. And there's definitely some point to that. They're very influential, and they kind of get to decide what you are seeing.
Right.
You know, so...
Did he get paid for his invention?
Boy, you would think that would be in the story, and it's not for some reason. I'm sure he got paid. I hope
not
handsomely.
Much.
I'm hoping.
I bet not. Somebody took his idea and ran with it. But in the old days, when you would go to get on the internet, it was your home phone number. You connected to AOL. You would dial up this number. Beep, boop, bop, bop, beep, boop, beep. And then you'd hear a noise.
I can't do it again. My throat hurts.
You're no fun. Are you talking to Nina Blackwood
talking
on
like,
the internet?
Talking like Nina Blackwood.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi. I go back a long way on the internet. My first computer was an Apple with a serial number of 1410.
Wow.
When 101 to 999, those were sold in kit form.
The 999 were the German computers.
Anyway, so my wife was always against it. And I kept arguing with her, saying, you know, there's going to come a time when you won't be able to ask a question, where you won't be able to get an answer from the internet. And so she tolerated it. And then one day, I'm on the computer, and I said, here, sit down. The Bears were about to kick off. I said, sit down and go into a chat room. And if you see something in italic, and this was before a web browser.
Yeah.
This was command line with that little carrot, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the right. And I said, now, once you log on, go to a chat room and just experiment. When you see something in italics or underline, that's a hyperlink. You click on that, you go to another website. And so I said, I'm going to go watch the Bear game. And so I come back, and I said, well, what do you think? And she goes, this is great. I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm talking to a 13-year-old girl on how to put on makeup. And I went, wait, Scott, cut, log off, log off, log off. I knew that wasn't a good thing. logged on talking to a 13-year-old.
No, that's not going to end well. Joe, do you remember what you paid? First of all, why were you such an early adapter to computers and the internet, and what did you pay for them back then? Do you remember?
By the time I bought a letter quality printer, a dot matrix, an MX-80 dot matrix, and an NEC Spinwriter letter quality printer with paper that was tractor feed, and the Apple computer, I had about $7,000 in debt.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was expensive back then.
It was. It was. So.
Well, that's a great story,
anyway,
Joe. Thank you.
I thought that was a funny story.
It is. So. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Happy birthday, WWW, as Bill said.
Yep.
And Rosemary is on the line. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. I just want to call and tell you a feel-good story. I hadn't seen my brother in 36 years, and my niece got on the Yahoo Messenger,
mm-hmm.
and she seen my brother's name, and she said, she got in there, and she said, my name is Emily, and are you my uncle? And he said, yes, and then my family and I got reconnected through.
Oh, that's perfect.
That's pretty great. And that's what people use Facebook for now, too, is to, you know, connect with family members that they don't get to see on a regular basis.
Yeah, I have Facebook for that very reason. But I wanted to tell you that because I always, and we found out he had emphysema and we only had him for 6 years. So it was really a good story.
Oh, sorry, Rosemary.
Really
thanks, Rosemary.
Life.
Have a great
thank you.
Take
have
care
a
of yourself.
Day. By the way, I enjoy your show.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice. Thank you.
We appreciate it, Rosemary. I hope you keep listening.
Who told us the story that in the early days of computers, whenever their computer would say, you've got mail, his wife would go to the mailbox? Do you remember somebody telling us that story on the air one time? I can't remember who it was.
A celebrity?
No, I don't think it was a celebrity. It was just somebody we
you've got mail.
Yeah, and then the wife would go, oh, and then head over to the mailbox to check to see if mail had come.
Can I just tell you that was the best sound in the world? Because you didn't, like, now you're inundated with emails, and a lot of times if I don't answer them right away, they go into some kind of nether region, and I never answer people, and then it never reminds me to answer them.
Right.
You got to do it right away. Now you're inundated, but back then when you would sign on to your account and you would hear, you've got mail, you felt like you won the popularity
contest.
Things are
going my way. I have some mail. And please tell everybody how many pieces of email you currently have, because this is I find this
well,
to be...
Well, I purged a while ago, and now...
Did you?
Yeah, I had like 80,000.
80,000 pieces of email.
Now I have 17,878.
Oh, that's nothing.
It's better. I purged 70,000.
How did you decide what to keep and what to get rid of? What was the criteria
for
getting rid of it?
Here's what the problem is, Bill. Every time you go to look or go shopping online, you have to register for their website.
Right, sure.
They don't even like let you look around Wayfair without having to register.
Oh.
So I just went to my Google box and got rid of all my junk mail, and
that was
the 80,000, yeah.
But you're down to just 17,000, and you could probably get rid of that in... And how long would it take?
Well,
I
never know when I'm going to need this stuff.
Oh.
Some of it's old emails from you. I like to save
really
them
old.
Just from, yeah, probably.
Really old.
Some of these like date back a long time.
Yeah.
Let me just search Bill Leff and tell you, I still have a ton of them from you. Some can be used against you.
Why is it so hard for you to get rid of them, though? Why don't you want to?
Because I don't.
Won't your computer run faster if you get rid of all those?
No, this is all like kind of in the cloud.
Oh.
This goes back to February 15.
Of?
14.
Of when?
2014.
Oh, that's not bad. I thought you were going to say from 15 years ago or 20 years ago.
There wasn't the internet.
Yeah, you were getting email 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Not at this email address.
Oh, it's a new address.
Oh, my God. This is 2011.
Yeah. I'm surprised that's...
Oh, my God.
I'm shocked it doesn't go back way farther than that. But if you didn't have that email address, then it wouldn't.
Well, I've had this one since 2011, evidently, and I emailed you something. I was having a hard time loading.
I'll get back to you soon.
Okay.
I'm still considering your offer.
Oh, I'm a little embarrassed.
No, please. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got some news, and then Julie Morita joins us. We'll talk medicine with her. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I don't need to tell anybody this. There is a definite opioid crisis out there. And Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, Dr. Julie Morita, is on with us right now. Hi, Dr. Morita. How are you?
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I am just puzzled and confused. How do we fight this opioid crisis? What do we do here?
This is a nationwide problem, and we've been dealing with this for many years now. I think the health department has done a fantastic job. My staff have done a really great job in terms of getting access to information and data so we can really understand what's happening in the city of Chicago. Because there's been so much focus on prescription opioids or medications that are prescribed by healthcare providers. And so what we've done is we actually got the data from the medical examiner, and we're able to see that, you know, in Chicago, our problem, the people who are dying from overdoses are actually dying because of heroin and fentanyl-laced heroin or synthetic fentanyl, which is poisoning the heroin and then allowing people to die because it's more potent than natural heroin. So that's the problem in the city of Chicago, and it's affecting most of our neighborhoods. Though it's more of a problem in the south and the west sides, it's certainly affecting all of our neighborhoods.
Is it true that it begins with painkillers? I went out with some girlfriends last night. All of our kids are in high school and beyond, and one of the moms was telling me that her son came home and talked about these cocktails that these kids make that are, there's some alcohol in there, there's some codeine in there, and there is some kind of other painkiller or Xanax. I'm like, what are you? We would open up our can of beer, maybe underage and shouldn't, but they're mixing these things into drinks?
Right. So I think if you go back over time, at the same time that we saw the increased prescribing of opioids for pain management, we also saw this increase in opioid use disorders and overdose deaths. So at the same time doctors were prescribing more opioids for pain management, we also saw that more people were dying of overdoses. And the reason that happened is because about 20 years ago, there was a real focus on healthcare providers managing pain. And so it became the fifth vital sign. And so people were not supposed to have any pain, and healthcare providers were being educated to really manage pain as much as possible. And so these prescription opioids were prescribed, and individuals got addicted to these medications. I think the manufacturers themselves played a role in that because they didn't convey the risks associated with these medications, that there really is great addiction potential. And so as a result, when kids were getting their wisdom teeth pulled, or they had an ACL repaired, or they had another kind of minor surgery, they would get prescribed long courses of opioids, and then there might be medication left over, and people keep it in their cabinets, and so then kids would have access to them afterwards and potentially misuse them.
Julie, in the past, we've had Tim Ryan here on the program several times. Tim has had some heroin addiction problems himself and now has dedicated his life to helping people get away from heroin. He talks about the combination of that drug, heroin, being both affordable and accessible, and that's what's created the uptick in heroin abuse. That's what's going on here with the opioids, right?
Well, that is a component. Heroin is less expensive and it's accessible. And now what we're finding is this heroin is laced with other medications like this fentanyl or synthetic opioids, which makes them more potent and more likely to cause death. So the Department of Public Health over the past few years, and the mayor is intensely focused on this issue, have really ramped up our efforts to make sure that the things that we know work are available. So we know there's evidence to say that making medication-assisted treatment available to people will help decrease deaths. We also know that making sure that naloxone, which is a reversal agent, is available so that if individuals do overdose and their loved ones have naloxone, they can administer the naloxone and save a person's lives. And so over the past few years, the city has doubled our investment in treatment for substance use disorders, focused primarily in recent years on medication-assisted treatment for opioids, and then also made significant investments in making sure that naloxone is available. So with partners like the Chicago Recovery Alliance, we're making sure that people in the community have access to naloxone. All of our EMS responders have naloxone available, and then now in four districts in Chicago, we have police officers who have naloxone available to use for anybody who overdoses.
Is that a very expensive thing to have on hand?
It's not super expensive, and there's different forms of it. There's injectable forms and there's nasal forms of it, but it's definitely worth having available because by administering this medication, you can save a person's life. What happens with these opioids is the side effect is that it causes people to stop breathing, and if you stop breathing, you will die. The naloxone, if injected or if inhaled through the nose, will actually reverse the effect and people will start breathing again. So within a matter of a short period of time, people can have these overdoses reversed and their lives will be saved.
Although their lives will be saved, but their addiction won't be, and they need to get help. I was talking to someone I work with who is kind of against the naloxone, saying you're just going to continue their addiction. And I said, well, what if that person who overdosed was your child? You would do anything in your power to save this kid, and you do need to save them and bring them back to life, but you also have to help them get over that addiction or they will continue to use.
I think that's right. We know that public health approaches has approached various diseases in this way using harm reduction approaches, which means that for HIV transmission, what we do is we've done syringe exchanges, so basically giving people clean syringes if they have substance use disorders, and so they're not spreading HIV because they're sharing needles or syringes. The other thing that we do is we distribute condoms, and there's been always, with both types of interventions, there was this huge pushback saying, oh, by exchanging syringes or by providing condoms, we're just promoting bad behaviors. But that's not necessarily true. There have been numerous studies that have showed that these kinds of programs don't necessarily encourage or promote bad, dangerous behaviors. What they do is they actually just prevent the infection, HIV infections, prevent chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, prevent pregnancy. We're preventing diseases by making these things available, recognizing that people are doing these things already. And so the same goes for naloxone. We recognize there are people who are using opioids. We know that there will be people that overdose, and so we need to make sure that people are equipped to actually respond and administer the naloxone so they can save a life.
That's such an archaic way of thinking. Like, you know, I have two boys. I've talked to them about condoms. I'm certainly not giving them the go-ahead to have sex, but I think they need to know about it because it's proven a lot of these people do it anyway, so why not protect them in any way you can?
Right. It's any time that we have an intervention, there's always questions. It's interesting. You and I have talked about the HPV vaccine as
yep.
well. That people are concerned that if you give the HPV vaccine, the kids will think they can go out and have sex more. But that also has not been proven to be true. Giving HPV vaccine prevents people from getting cervical cancer, head and neck cancer, throat cancer, and it does not increase their likelihood of having sex. And so we just have to keep an open mind about these kinds of things and make sure that people have these kinds of services and these knowledge and these tools available to them.
We need to take a break, and there's a listener, Scott, who is, I hope you stay on hold because you need to talk to Dr. Julie Morita, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, and we're talking about the opioid epidemic, which is everywhere and certainly here at home in Chicago. It's Bill. It's Wendy, 720 WGN.
Our guest is Dr. Julie Morita. Julie is the Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. We're talking about the opioid crisis. And Scott has a story. He knows this story. He knows this crisis all too well. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Sure.
Dr. Morita's here with you.
Hello.
Oh, thank you. Hello. I'm one of the boyfriends of someone who was on the TV show Intervention. And it seems like everyone's got a system, and they tolerate the drug more than try to help people. The help's not there, and everyone wants it. And there's just no help for them. That's what it seems like.
And I got to tell you, I don't, thank God heroin has not entered into our family at this point, and I hope it never does. But I can't imagine someone who does heroin is expecting or wanting to die. I can't imagine that. They want help, I would imagine, all the time. Dr. Morita, what do you think?
This is true. I think we know that individuals who have addictions to heroin and other opioids, when they overdose, it's a wake-up call. And so engaging with them shortly after something like that, we're often able to get them connected to healthcare services and to the treatment they actually need. What we see, the evidence actually shows that when people need to to overcome their addictions, they need to be on medications to actually help them wean themselves off of the heroin and the other opioids. And on top of that, there are other counseling services that are necessary. And so getting people connected to these services is critical. What's happened recently is that there are more and more healthcare providers who are becoming trained and capable of doing this kind of treatment. And so many of our public clinics, many of our healthcare systems and hospitals are expanding their capacity to make these kinds of services available because they recognize the need. Insurance companies cover these services, and there's a law that was passed a few years back requiring parity so that mental health and behavioral health services should be covered in the same way that physical health services are covered. So these services are covered, and then what the city has done is really increase our investment so that we can actually make funding available to individuals who don't have insurance so they can also accept these services and get these services. I think there's also an element of stigma. People are embarrassed about admitting that they have a substance use disorder. It's the same as with mental illness. People are embarrassed to say that they have depression or they have anxiety. And so we really have to work with the public to break that down and to say you shouldn't be embarrassed. If you have these problems, these are diseases just like diabetes, high blood pressure. If you have a substance use disorder, there is help available. Get the services and you can overcome it.
I want to tell you, Scott, about Tim Ryan, a man in recovery foundation. We'll get you, I'll find the website and tell you, because that is someone who doesn't have insurance and needs help. He is a great resource and really, truly tries to help people. Good luck with your girlfriend, Scott.
Thank you.
Dr. Marita, I was telling Bill off the air briefly, I did have a knee replacement, and a doctor prescribes painkillers, and at some point I called to say, you know, I'm out of pain pills, and they said, how bad is your pain on a scale from 1 to 10? And I said, oh, probably a 2, and they're like, we're not renewing it, which is good. A surgeon does have to stop just automatically prescribing painkillers.
I think that's right. I think, and that's what healthcare providers are much more aware of that now. We've learned from that fifth vital sign era where we felt like no pain was what the goal was, that we really can't have that, and that there are actually alternatives to opioids for controlling pain. There's things like non-steroidals like ibuprofen or Motrin, acetaminophen or Tylenol, those kinds of things help control pain. We also know that yoga and physical therapy and meditation can also help with pain as well. And so there's alternative modes of therapy that can help complement recovery so that you don't actually have to use opioids regularly or for prolonged periods of time.
Even acupuncture works.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. There are studies that show that acupuncture can help with pain as well.
Where do we stand nationally, would you say, Julie? How does Chicago hold up against the rest of the nation in terms of this crisis?
I think we're different than the rest of the nation in that in some parts of the country, in rural areas and suburban areas, it really is more prescription opioids that are causing the problem. In Chicago and other urban areas, what we're seeing is more heroin and then fentanyl-laced heroin contributing to the overdose deaths. And so the epidemic is a little bit different in the city of Chicago. We're also seeing the age group is a little bit different in Chicago, where it's a younger population in rural and more suburban areas. What we're seeing is that 50% of the people who had overdoses were between the ages of 45 and 64 in Chicago, so it's an older age group. So our epidemic is a little bit different than other parts of the U.S., but it's still a huge problem throughout the United States.
I don't want to badmouth Naperville, but anytime this discussion comes up, Naperville is mentioned. What's going on in Naperville that's making it so bad?
You know, I don't know the data from Naperville that well. I know the data in Chicago better than anything, and I think, like I said, in all parts of the United States, we're suffering from this epidemic, and that we actually need to coordinate our efforts. We're using a comprehensive approach. The city has done some very strategic things in terms of suing pharmaceutical companies in 2014 for marketing their medications irresponsibly. We also just announced that we're suing three of the largest distributors last week because they play a role in identifying places that are ordering too much of the opioids and actually reporting them or withholding additional medication to them. And we don't feel like they did a good job with that. So there's a city suing them. We've done a whole bunch of healthcare provider education to make sure providers are prescribing responsibly. And then also a group of providers that are very motivated and want to do this medication-assisted treatment, that they're actually getting technical assistance to help them to be successful in that work and be able to increase the services that are available.
I have heard the statistic, and I have to be honest with you. I have told people this statistic, and I'd like to go. I'd like you to tell me if this is true. I've heard that it's much easier for kids to score some heroin than it is to actually buy alcohol underage. Is that true or false?
I don't actually know that as a fact. I don't have that information. So,
all right, because I have heard that from people. Not saying you should drop the drinking age back to 18, but it does seem that it's harder to do everything. And I can't believe heroin can be scored very easily. I'm still pretty naive about that. I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to go to get it.
Yeah, I think alcohol is still a problem. I mean, because we're really focusing and talking about heroin and prescription opioid use disorders, alcohol is a major problem as well. We know particularly at events, these large events like Lollapalooza, there's a lot of kids that end up in the emergency rooms with alcohol poisoning because they're just consuming way too much. Binge drinking in the United States is a problem. And so I wouldn't say that the alcohol problem is not there. It is there. What we're seeing is this dramatic increase in opioid use disorders and opioid overdoses that's really triggering all of our activity right now. But there is a need to keep our eyes and ears open related to alcohol use disorders as well.
Is there any good news in all this, Julie? Just give us one little tidbit of good news. Is there some?
I mean, I think there's a great... The healthcare system definitely recognizes their role in helping with this problem in terms of working with encouraging healthcare providers to prescribe responsibly, increasing commitments and investments to make services available, like medication-assisted treatment services available. We are coordinating really, really well with first responders, so police and fire are able to equip to do reversal. I think the other thing is we're seeing that the pharmaceutical companies, five of the major pharmaceutical companies were sued in 2014. It's now morphed into a multi-jurisdiction lawsuit. But Purdue Pharma, which actually creates OxyContin, actually has made a commitment earlier this year to not market their products to healthcare providers. That's a major step in the right direction because part of why healthcare providers were prescribing these medications so liberally is because they didn't believe that or know and understand the risks associated with them. And so the manufacturers stepping back and saying, okay, we're just not going to market our product to healthcare providers really helps with this situation. So we didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get out of this situation overnight, but we need to work together. And what I'm seeing us do in this jurisdiction and other places is that we're working together in a coordinated way to help prevent substance use disorder, but also to make treatment available for those who already have it. One of the things I didn't mention that I want to mention, too, is that we also have a website called overcomeopioids.com where individuals can understand about the disease. We also have a website that makes services, makes available online services for people or places where people can go to get services. It's called chicagoconnects.org. So if people go to that website, they can actually put in their jurisdiction where they live and find services that are nearby. So our goal is really to help raise awareness, destigmatize, and make sure people know where services are available.
Overcomeopioids.com and chicagoconnects.org. Dr. Julie Morita, she's commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break. We'll check in with Steve, find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.